All right.
Good morning, everybody. I will call to order the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for this Tuesday, March 20th, 2018. We actually have a 7-page agenda today, so I'm sure all of you will be staying for the whole meeting that will finish sometime after lunch today. But let's start, as we always start, by honoring America with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, thanks and good morning. First item on our agenda, as always, is public comment number one. This is an opportunity for members of the public to talk about anything they want to talk about. Anybody wishing to do so, please come on up to the microphone. And seeing no one moving to the microphone, we'll move on to receive and open bids for Tedesco Environmental Learning Corridor bid package number 2. And we got Ryan today because our friend Mike Cox is traveling.
Yep, he's up in Alaska.
All right. I want to see the other folks, right?
Good morning.
So we'll be opening bids today for phase 2 of our Tedesco Environmental Learning Corridor project. This portion of the project will include in-park construction for trail work and in-park amenities. So. The park's located at 3410 University Boulevard in Ames, Iowa. It sounds like we have 6 bidders today.
And phase 1 is largely complete and looking spectacular.
Yep, it is. So we got some owner-provided items yet, a little bit of stabilization work left, but I'd say it's 95-97% finished up.
Good. So. And you're going to have some big tree planting coming here before long.
Yes. Coming up in April, we've got some volunteer programs lined up with the public to plant trees all along that trees and shrubs.
Okay, sorry.
Thank you.
Just in case you think something.
He could have.
So Luke Monette is here with Shy Battery. He's our lead engineer on the project. So he'll be.
Yeah, Luke's been with this thing from day one. You got to be happy with how it's progressed so far, Luke.
Yeah, it's an exciting project. We're excited to be part of it and excited to open up the second phase here and keep things going.
Yeah, have good thoughts. We need good low bids here, Luke.
We'll see what happens.
All right.
The first bid to be opened is submitted by Howry Construction out of Rockwell City. A bid security is included. Acknowledgement of addendum number 1. Non-collusion affidavit is included, as well as the bidder status form.
All right, the base bid total will be $1,059,159.50. 1059159.50. The alternate bid will be $173,280.00. 173,280.00.
And the alternate is different trail material, right?
Correct.
The second bid opened is from Boulder Contracting out of Grundy Center, Iowa. Thank you. Bid security is included. Non-collusion affidavit is included. Acknowledgement of addendum number one. Bidder status form is included. Non-collusion affidavit.
The base bid total is $930,799.00, 930,799.00. The alternate bid total is $145,920.00, 145,920.00.
Some good material.
Mm-hmm. Not even I could justify that.
The next bid received is from Schecker Engineering out of Des Moines. Bid bond is included. Addendum number one is acknowledged. The bidder status form is included. As well as a non-collusion affidavit.
Base bid total is $1,086,713.00, 1086713.00, and the alternate bid is $147,569.00, 147569.00.
Next bid is from Caliber Concrete, LLC out of Adair, Iowa. Bid security is included. Addendum number one is acknowledged. Non-collusion affidavit is included. well as the Bitter Spanish form.
Base bid total is $949,848.54. 949,848.54. The alternate bid will be $164,160.00. 164,160.00.
Next bid received is from MPS Engineers out of Des Moines, Iowa. The bid security is included. Addendum number one is acknowledged. Bidder status form is included. Non-collusion affidavit is included.
Base bid total, $1,128,836.50. Is 1,128,836.50. Alternate bid is $165,780. 16 and 0 cents. 165,780.00.
The last bid to be opened here is from Minturn Incorporated out of Brooklyn, Iowa. Bid security is included. Addendum number one is acknowledged. Bidder status form is included. Non-collusion affidavit is included.
The base bid total is $1,065,596.70. 1,065,596.70. The alternate bid is $164,160.00. 164,160.00.
Thank you, guys. So we have an apparent low bidder, but you guys are going to go check the numbers. You're going to run it through the conservation board, and it'll come back to us next week, Ryan. Is that the intent?
Correct. Well, we have a special conservation board on the 26th, and we'll have it back here for award on the 27th next week.
Super. Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. You're able to stick around for our COLA discussion, right?
Yep.
Okay. Perfect. Next item is discussion and consideration of National Service Recognition Day Proclamation for April 3rd, 2018. Jerry, you want to come on up? And you got your camera as well, so I think you're expecting a photo op. No, we'll get it done.
We have plans for 2 o'clock.
So you brought this to our attention and asked that we consider it. Give us 2 minutes on exactly what this is and what you're asking of us, or more.
Well, I think everyone's aware how important volunteerism is in our community. I work at United Way of Story County, and the volunteers coming through our community programs, the partnerships that we have, are incredibly important to the Human Service Agency's ability to get the work done to meet the needs of the people that they're serving. I have Breanne Sullivan with me, who is actually our interim VISTA for this year. She's working on financial stability issues around the county. And would you like to say a couple sentences? We're not going to talk long. Michelle kind of promised us we wouldn't have to talk at all, so we're winging it.
Sorry about that. Yeah.
You know me, Rick. I can talk about anything. So, do you want to tell us a couple of things you've been working on this year?
Sure. So I started back in July at United Way of Story County, looking at free tax preparation services in the county, also planning a financial stability event coming up at the end of the month to raise awareness about barriers to financial stability in our community.
So thank you for considering our request to do a proclamation about the National Service Recognition Day, which is scheduled for April 3rd this year. And again, it's just in honor of the volunteerism that all volunteers across the community are doing.
Outstanding. All right, so let's read it in and then see what, if any, action we're going to take. National Service Recognition Day Proclamation. Whereas service to others is a hallmark of Iowa culture and central to how we meet our challenges, and whereas local, state, and national elected officials are increasingly turning to service and volunteerism as a cost-effective strategy to meet city and county needs, and whereas AmeriCorps and Senior Corps address the most pressing challenges facing our cities and nation, from educating students for the jobs of the 21st century and supporting veterans and military families to preserving the environment and helping communities recover from natural disasters, and whereas service expands economic opportunity by creating more sustainable, resilient communities and providing education, career skills, and leadership ability for those who serve, and whereas national service participants serve in more than 70,000 locations across the country, bolstering the civic, neighborhood, and faith-based organizations that are so vital to our economic and social well-being, and whereas local volunteers serve in more than 80 opportunities in Story County on a weekly basis, identifying and addressing local needs, and whereas volunteers increase the impact of the organizations they serve with both through their direct service and by recruiting and managing millions of additional volunteers, and whereas National Service represents a unique public-private partnership that invests in community solutions and leverages non-federal resources to strengthen community impact and increase the return on taxpayer dollars, and whereas AmeriCorps and members of Senior Corps volunteers alongside local volunteers demonstrate commitment, dedication, and patriotism by making an intensive commitment to service, a commitment that remains with them in their future endeavors, and whereas the Corporation for National and Community Service shares a priority with elected officials at all levels nationwide to engage citizens, improve lives, and strengthen communities, and is joining with the National League of Cities, City of Service, and officials across the country to recognize the impact of service. Therefore, be it resolved that we, Board of Supervisors of Story County, do hereby proclaim April 3rd, 2018, as National Service Recognition Day, and encourage residents to recognize the positive impact of national service in our country and thank those who serve and to find ways to give back to their communities. Questions, comments, or a motion, Board?
I would move that we approve this proclamation.
I would second that.
Motion and a second. Any further discussion? Thank you so much for bringing it to us. Olson.
Aye.
Chitty.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. It passes. We can do a photo op right now. Yeah, we need both of you guys in it. How are you? Nice to meet you. We're talking. That's okay. One of those has got to be good.
Cool.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, next item is discussion and consideration of partnering with the City of Colo for engineering feasibility study for the potential connection of Hickory Grove septic system to the Colo City Lagoon.
I'd like to ask Amy and Earl if you'd like to come up and join us.
Yeah. All right, so background on this is we have an old lagoon system at Hickory Grove Park that is, let's say it's nearing the end of its life, because that's a polite way to say that it is time to do something different. For years, several years now, Amy, we've been working on this concept of whether we can pipe it to the Colo Lagoon, and we're to the point that City of Colo has asked for the county to join with them in commissioning an engineering study to make sure that your lagoon has capacity to handle what the expected discharge would be.
So I don't know if we really need an engineering study. Maybe we need to reword this. So I talked to our engineer yesterday, and he said that our lagoon is designed for 31.5 million gallons of waste a year, and we discharge twice a year, which that has nothing to do with it really. But then they go back and look at the last five years of the wettest 180 days, which for us was 2015, and we were at 30.4 million gallons, so we had about a million gallons left. So when Mike's numbers of the 500,000 gallons, what you think you're going to get from Hickory, we're going to be coming up against our top of our flow, especially if we ever get a housing development through. So then I asked him, what do we do to try and resolve this? So we discussed, 10 years ago, I think we did some sewer main survey, or it was a flow rating, I guess.
Right.
And we found several areas in town we need to regrout steel. So we already have that compiled, that information, so I don't think we need to go back and visit that. So then Marty and I have discussed smoke testing.
Yes.
He doesn't think that's necessary because we only found like three places last time and we really haven't changed anything for infrastructure. So he is recommending that we put an ordinance into place that says, like Nevada has this ordinance where every house has to be inspected before it is sold to make sure that they are the sump pumps going into
not into
the sanitary. So I guess what we need to do is get that ordinance in place saying that we can go into the houses and do this. But I don't think we need to wait till sales go. I think we need to hit it now and figure out, just go in that section of town and say, okay, we're starting here.
Uh-huh.
Call the citizens and say, you need to set an appointment with, either, I don't know if we're going to do this section. There's only two of us, so I don't know if that will be feasible, but or we hire an outside source.
But that's got to go back before the city council for you guys to make any kind of decision
well,
on that.
The council didn't agree we have to do something anyways, but we just got to, I think that's where we need to start.
Okay.
So I don't honestly think, and this just came yesterday, Marty, sorry, I'm just throwing this on you.
No.
I don't think we really need to spend money on the engineering. We may need more help on the inspection.
Yeah, and so our goal, I believe, as a board of supervisors and as a county conservation department is to find a way to get to a final answer. We want the final answer to be yes, we can tie on,
yes.
But most important to us is we've got to get to a final answer so that if the answer is no, we can move on to plan B or plan C.
And I don't think the council's leaning towards no. It's just if we're hoping for housing, I mean,
sure,
that's what everybody wants. We're kind of running in place right now again. But if we don't have housing, the engineer says we should have no problem taking you on. But we got to prepare for long term because you just can't put up lagoon in for 200,000. I mean,
right.
Our lagoon's not old, so. But the lagoon's not the problem, it's just the infiltration. So we get that under control.
Okay. What I'm hearing is you're suggesting now we don't need to partner, there needs to not be an engineering study. What do you need from us to help this process move along?
I can't speak for the council, but I'm thinking that maybe if you were to help subsidize a little bit of the inspection process. I mean, the citizen pays for it. Like Nevada, he was telling you that if there's a problem, they'll pay up to $750 towards the fixing of the problem to get the sump ran outside to in the sanitary. I guess I don't know. I don't know how far you guys are wanting to push it. I know you're dwindling with time here.
So yeah, I mean, and the problem, so on our agenda is consideration of an engineering study, and so if that engineering study was to look at how much groundwater infiltration is going into your system, we've got the ability to do something with that today. Anything beyond that would take a request and come back at a different meeting.
Yeah. So I guess that's however you want to handle it. I don't.
Well,
I guess one of my questions here, when you talked about there's only two of us, how would we go into the inspections? Maybe that's one question for the COLO Council to clarify, is do they want you to be doing those inspections, or is it better to hire it out to someone who does them full-time or who has real knowledge about the hookups? Okay, so that's one question.
We've done this before.
Okay.
And we hired some inspector for me, so I think Homer can do it. I mean, Sean Cole said anybody can do it as long as you know what you're looking for.
Okay.
There's no state regulations on it.
And who is Sean again?
He's the
Nevada city engineer.
Thank you. Okay. So,
What would the council like to see from us? And I know you can't speak for the council, but your perspective.
It's just us, Earl. Just say what you said in the meeting. I think
we're fine with partnering with you. That's not the problem. I think they're just worried we don't want to cut off our own foot.
Yeah.
And then we're overflows. And
sure.
We're in trouble with the DNR, which we are not. We haven't ever been in trouble with the DNR. We prefer to keep it that way. But
I may have a question for Ryan or the Conservation Board. This $500,000 number that Mike Cox provided, that's for with us at maximum capacity there.
Maximum's higher, isn't it? Was it maximum like $2 million?
I believe that's
yeah. So that's my other concern. What if they have an overflow of campers? I mean, I don't foresee campers bringing that much, but
you
don't know, and he doesn't really know numbers. I mean, you don't have any hard numbers from your years before on your flows for the lagoon, do you? Because that's my concern. Because, I mean, we go back from the beginning, but I don't think you guys had to do that.
So
I believe those numbers are based on projections for expansion of camping at Hickory Grove. So we're looking down the line at the future as well. And those, we should have cushion built into that, and we should not exceed that. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so there's a big difference between what we've got now and where you were looking at the expansion number being.
Yeah, because you
probably want to
be sure
of that. Okay.
250,000 or 250 million gallons now, or are you under that, you think?
I don't have those numbers.
Okay.
Are you looking at our wastewater flows?
Yeah.
Our, I got 560,000. Our average.
For now. Okay.
So it is a current one. Okay, so that only leaves capacity of a half a million to begin with on their system.
Unless there's a lot of infiltration.
There you go. Well, we know there is, because when there's heavy rain, our levels go up.
Well, you did yourself a big favor last fall in identifying a field tile on the west side of town.
Yeah.
And I suspect that artificially raised their outflows. And that was taken away. That was like an 8 or 12 inch field tile that was draining into the system. So they have got that rectified, and we'd like to think that's the big problem. Now you have a series of, as on the joints, and then an additional homes that might be dumping their stormwater into your sanitary.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's kind of where the conversation is in my mind.
Okay. And B&K also, the engineer, also said that if you have 10 sump pumps going into the, that could be half a million gallon right there.
Right.
So.
And so that was a 2015 number you quoted. What does the number look like in 16 and 17?
Way low, because we haven't had any rain.
Which tells me a lot of how much water is
getting.
Exactly.
Exactly.
So there may be more capacity, Morris, than what we're
doing. They've taken a big step in reducing their outflows, but like Amy rightly says, we haven't had the rain events to really see on a comparison.
So I believe it's the Board of Supervisors' intent that we would partner with you for you to figure out whether you can accept our waste from Hickory Grove. I don't know exactly what that looks like. In my mind, the council needs to talk it through, and if it's not an engineering study, what does that partnership look like, and come back to us?
Yeah, and I spoke with the mayor this morning on this, and he agrees with me. We have to get it. We just can't.
Well, it would be nice the next time that you talk that you could find the numbers and where you're involved as far as doing the home inspections. So that in turn comes back to us with, okay, now we can start getting a number worked up as far as authorizing to do this.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, thank you.
Yep.
So, appreciate you coming in. This is moving this ahead, and I thank you.
Absolutely. We just got to get to an answer.
Yeah.
Thanks.
All right.
Next is agency reports. Then we're going to start with legal aid, Karen Forbes. I just read.
Okay. Yeah, Karen wasn't able to be here, so I'm actually doing this on her behalf.
Thanks, Melissa.
So as noted, my name is Melissa Murray. I'm the office manager actually over at legal aid. Our main goal is actually to help the individual population with their legal problems. In order that they can achieve stability in their lives for themselves and for their children. The legal system is a powerful tool for helping people achieve stability, but it's also an extremely complex system, and it can be difficult to navigate without the help of a competent attorney. Without our services, many of the low-income residents of Story County would find their access to the judicial system extremely limited. Who we work with are going to be people that are at 125% of the federal poverty level or lower, and we only do work with civil cases. And those civil cases must not be degenerating. We are actually located just across the street, so we're real close. It's also noted that we are not part of Iowa Legal Aid, so we are a completely separate entity. We are just Story County. We do not receive any federal funding, and nearly 100% of our funding actually comes locally from here within Story County. We do employ three full-time attorneys, Karen Forbes, who is our executive director, Peggy Nicolati, Bethany Miller, myself as the office manager. We do have a part-time receptionist that's kind of split between, a snowbird who spends the winters down in Florida, and a mom with school-aged children who works with us during the school year. We do have a Drake Law School intern over the summer, and we do usually have one work study position for an Iowa State student throughout the rest of the school year. In fiscal year of 2016-2017, we lost an attorney and we experienced a few other challenges, and as a result of that, we had a staffing shortage for about 10 months, where we were only working with two attorneys. And despite that, we still opened 124 new cases and spent nearly 3,150 hours in direct contact with clients. I'm sorry, that's 2,150, I should clarify that. Our average hours per client are 13.4 hours, and it leads to a total average cost per client of about $797 to our funders. So it's a really good value. Most of our cases are family law related, dealing with things like divorces, substitute cases, child support, and that's actually about 53% of our caseload. The other cases that we do are going to be things like guardianship at about 14% of our clients, landlord-tenant, dealing with evictions and other issues at about 11%, social security appeals at 7%, and other civil cases are about 15%. And those may include things like civil protective orders, unemployment appeals, and those sorts of things. Our clients also do face additional challenges in that nearly 39% of them do identify as having mental illness, and that can be exacerbated and display other symptoms and other issues can cause more problems when they have civil matters that are questioned. So we do provide the legal services with skill and with compassion, and we do give the client the opportunity to be heard and to understand that legal system. That combination works very well. We do measure our outcomes in these cases when working with everybody, in part by asking our clients to fill out an anonymous exit survey. And the clients have overwhelmingly found that our services have improved their lives by 93% is what they have stated. Specific benefits do increase their financial security with about 80% responding as such. 86 respond that we have helped them increase their physical safety, and 93% have responded saying that we have increased their family stability. So it is a program that works. In addition to these regular services, in 2016, we actually initiated an in-house volunteer lawyer project. And this is for applicants that fall just outside of our income guidelines, and we do extend that then up to 150% of the federal poverty guidelines. It also does cover folks that we do have conflicts with and would not be able to represent otherwise. So before we started the volunteer lawyer project, we actually had just kind of a list of references that we would have to provide the clients or the applicants, and they would have to go out and secure their own legal counsel. And in many cases, that provided an additional burden to them. So this new program, actually, the private attorneys that are interested in helping out do sign up. We do send out a wish list to them on a somewhat regular basis, depending on how often we are getting applicants and referrals to that program. And then periodically, it will respond to me by email, or we will make phone calls into it if you want. The attorneys have been and will continue to be, I'm sure, very proactive in helping us. In the first year, we had a placement rate of about 48%, which was a fantastic. And in large part, that was due to trying to figure out how to work with the conflicts and having those placed outside of the office because we could not do that directly. This year, we're actually enjoying an 88% placement rate in the volunteer lawyer project, so we are moving forward on that. And as always, we appreciate the financial support and every other kind of support that we get from Story County in being able to provide the service for the underserved population.
Thank you. It's an absolute necessary component to our social safety net that you guys provide. So thank you so much for that. Questions?
Nothing. I appreciate, as we now find the term rescue falling from our day-to-day vocabulary, the fact that your board and your staff follow citizens in Story County as they step outside the county to help address their needs in the sense that that was going above and beyond. And it makes the commitment we have with you that much more worthy for the fact that you're going the extra mile on behalf of people that have been residents of Story County yet still have needs that represent their time here. So thank you.
Melissa, I like that you guys noted here that as you're collecting your data, you're now starting when the application comes in rather than when you decide to take them on for the client. You noted here it's providing a broader picture of unmet needs. Can you give me an idea of some of the needs that people are still coming to you with that you're not able to serve right now?
A lot of that actually has to do with where their financial income actually.
Okay.
With again, since right now what we're looking at is 125% is our cutoff, looking more specifically at where they fall, we're finding that there's a fair number of them that are just over our guidelines and then moving up into 150-175% of federal poverty guidelines. So we're kind of looking at that and trying to determine some things. Where we can go to make sure that we're getting people the help that they need and recognizing that at least here in Story County, white folks have already left, but there is an unmet need with that because the population, there was 42% were at or below the level of actually being able to survive. So the household survival budget is different in Story County. It's much more accessible here than in many other counties in the state.
Who sets the income guideline then for you? Is it your board?
The 125%?
Yeah, the
125. That has been traditionally where it's been. Again, this is something where it comes down to the federal funding issue. But Iowa Legal Aid are actually required to keep it at 125% because of the federal funding coming in from the Legal Services Corporation.
Okay.
We don't have that federal funding, which is why we can look at other things and we can consider other things as well. But traditionally, we have kept it where Iowa Legal Aid has been.
Thank you.
Way, but
no, it's a good answer. Thank you for the background on that and where they are. So there's a capability maybe, but it would be to go even further away from the other legal aid model in the state. All right, thanks.
Good job. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, next is Central Iowa Tourism and the Convention and Visitors Bureau. Julian Allison.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you guys?
Good.
Hey, I hear that there might be a little bike ride coming through.
Really?
How's that? I just heard
the calendar out. Add it to the.
You haven't spent any time on that, have you?
Just a little. Actually, we're going to open with Central Iowa Tourism Region information today, and Allison has been on the board of that, and she will be the incoming president for CITR. So
yes,
she will be giving that report this morning.
I handed out a copy of the annual report as well as the Central Iowa Tourism Guide. Just a couple of things to note on the annual report in the special projects, the Iowa Tourism Leadership Institute. Last year, both Sean Damaris and myself participated, and we are continuing that again this year. And from our office, Crystal Davis and Sean Damaris will be doing year two. We have participated in the Power of Travel Day, attended for a number of years. This year, we're actually hosting. So the September 19th, the Power of Travel Day will be held at the Gateway Conference Center for 2018. And the other special project, the customer service training and the hospitality training, we have hosted a community countywide event for both years that we've offered that. So Ames has hosted. And this year we actually held two sessions. We did both a morning and an afternoon, and it was very well attended by the industry. And a number of them sent their frontline managers, desk clerks, and that type of thing, which was a great opportunity for professional development for that. And then in marketing, the Central Iowa Tourism Guide. You'll notice there is a three-page collaborative ad from the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau and our partner organizations that bought into that. So up towards the front. Travel Iowa Marketplace, we've always participated in promoting group travel. And this last year we shared a booth with Ryman Gardens, Stevens Auditorium, and ISU Museums to promote the area. So very busy on the Central Iowa front promoting the area. The annual meeting for CITR will be held on May 23rd at Hotel Grinnell. Unfortunately, I will not be attending. We'll be in the middle of Odyssey of the Mind World Finals in Ames. I mentioned the Power of Travel Day on September 19th. And then the Iowa Tourism Conference is changing their format a little bit, and it will be held in February. In the past, it's always been held in October, but it'll be February 6th through 8th of 2019 at the Prairie Meadows Casino will be the next one. So those are the things that are going on through Central Iowa Tourism, and appreciate that the county always steps up and participates with that. Central Iowa Tourism has had 100% participation from the counties in the region, and that's important, so we appreciate that.
Outstanding.
Thank you.
Congratulations on your appointment to president.
Well, thank you.
In addition to Central Iowa Tourism, the Iowa Destination Marketing Alliance, which is the CBBs across the state, are partnering a little differently with the Tourism Conference. And starting this year, they have some different reports that are coming in that give us an idea about the impact, the economic impact of tourism in the state of Iowa, but in different areas. So we're able to look at Story County and get those statistics. So the most current ones we have are 2016, and we've never shared these before. But travel expenditures for Story County in 2016 were over $206 million. So it's a significant industry for Story County. And that is up about 2.5% from 2015. And 2017, you'll see, I think that'll go up again when we get those numbers, probably about another 2-3%. So it's been on the rise in our county. However, we also get a new report that identifies the top 10 counties in Iowa. And Story County is number 10, and you can see where the other 9 counties are there. Substantially larger populations, a lot more hotel rooms. And while Story County has one of the highest average daily rate and highest occupancies, we still are lower than the other counties, and that literally has to do with the number of hotel rooms available. So if we look at those things, this is probably a prime area for potentially some hotel development as we look to the future.
I remember several years ago when looking at the proposal to redo Sheman, and I was in a focus group with that, and some numbers handed out back then were that our hotels operated about a 50% capacity. And Julie, what I'm hearing you say is that we still, that capacity or how they're operating has gone up, so we can use even more hotel rooms?
Yes, I know. The capacity, they are doing more occupancy and a higher average daily rate, but it's not with group rooms. Ames and Story County has had a wealth of growth in the commercial side, in the what we call a corporate traveler side rather than a group visitor. And the corporate travel side, especially due to the research park, has grown immensely in the last 3 or 4 years. Also with ISU Athletics adding additional outdoor facilities, we're able to do a lot more external events in the summertime on the green space. So what we've done since that time when we were looking at the convention centers, we've changed our marketing strategies. Allison works a lot more with the corporate market on making sure that their events can be held here, that their individual travelers have those needs. So demand is continuing to go up, but it's in a different way. We are, for the most part, out of the association business, the state association business from a conference center.
Different
markets.
Yeah, that goes on.
Yeah. It does. Change sometimes, you know, works out. But so as we look at that, we used to be the number 7 or 8 county. We are now down to 10. So the other counties in Iowa are surpassing us at this point in time.
But I would imagine that would be primarily through the group.
Correct.
What takes a lot of time to make up for one of those groups.
It takes a lot of time and probably not a sufficient use of our funds. When you can do the same events for 100 or you can do it for 5,000 and those type of things. So it is a different strategy, but more advertising, more co-op advertising to the individual traveler. The growth of Iowa State University has also been integral to that with the student population. Some other things, though, we did give you a calendar. So you've got a current calendar. You can see some of the groups on there. This starts our educational conference time frame, April. May will be graduation. Then we will kick off with Special Olympics, followed by the week later by Odyssey of the Mind World Finals, which we continue to host every other year, alternating with Michigan State. And then we have some softball tournaments here in Nevada that are supported through our office. And then Iowa Games falls in there on a weekend. And after the major weekend of Iowa Games, which will end on Sunday, we'll take a day off on Monday, and Ragbri will roll into town on that Tuesday. And across Story County, so you get to see a lot of Ragbri riders. And then we will end our summer month with Farm Progress, and then that starts the football season and the fall season at Iowa State. So a great year. This will be a great year for the tourism industry, so we'll be excited to bring you numbers in the future.
I'd like to go back to what you've got planned this summer, and I kind of mentioned it to Allison when I saw her at emergency management after walking out, but the county budget, we just budget for about $10,000 a year for tourism. And so far, Iowa Games has been the only one that has applied for it, and it's almost become an automatic that Iowa Games, I guess, you know, Chuck did come last year, the director, we never voted on them particularly. They just sent a bill later on, and they got their normal funding. So I mentioned to Allison that there is this $10,000 that's available that we put in the budget, and with Ragbri coming, having covered 2008 activities, I know that funding's always of interest, and you're out looking for funding. So I just thought I'd let you know that the county has money to be made for application. If you know, we don't. In fact, we don't have a standard. I guess you just bring a request to us, right?
As I'm sure you did in 2008, and I'm sure you're planning on doing this year.
We are. Allison and I have talked about that, and while we're working on our local budget, we also realize that this is a county event, and so we're looking at the expenses with some of the other communities that we might share with them on how to access that funds for while Ragbri is actually in the county this time.
Okay. So I might follow up on this later then, after this report, just about the process.
Okay. So now that just begs the question, does Iowa Games have their funding for this year? Because that would be, that's
Iowa.
April
3rd.
Okay.
April.
Yeah.
Okay. I think it's April 3rd, is that right? When did you put Chuck on the agenda? Okay. Yes, he's coming later.
Okay, that was what I was going to follow up is now what are we actually going to have a process on?
Okay.
We are in our process.
There we go.
The other thing I wanted to draw your attention to was the community grant program. The Convention and Visitors Bureau sets aside 5% of the hotel and motel tax we receive each year for the following year. And this is funds that is really about the quality of life and activities and events that occur in the area. And it is in the area, not just in Ames. And this year, on the back of your sheet, you'll find that we gave out, I think, about 32 awards over right at $92,000. This is something that we would like to see grow. We focused for a while on Iowa State University and some of the student events. We would like to focus this more, even expanding it into the county a little bit more, on exciting events that might add to the quality of life for all the citizens. So we just wanted to bring that to your attention and let you know that applications are available right now for 2019 for events and activities that happen in the general area.
So I wanted to mention that as well.
Outstanding. Thank you. Other questions? Marty, anything?
I would turn, would we want to host that link to our new website?
Yeah, I think so. That is, I'm seeing Leanne in the back here. Barb's not here, but the link, we were just talking about a link to that application process.
And that.
And also, thank you. So, yeah, tell me for that. Also, my thought is about there are some, like, Center Grove in Cambridge that does some things or whatever about how we might want to reach out to those agribusiness type or agritourism type. I assume that you're talking about if they have a special event like that or some of the earring days or something like that. Those are the things you're talking about, right?
Correct.
So to figure out how we can help you promote that.
I can't let you go, Julie, without telling this story that you told Deb Shildroth and I at our follow-up. Julie and Deb and I went to Columbia, Missouri last fall, and we had such a robust conversation on the way back on a bus that we've done some follow-up meetings. Julie was talking about what her and her organization does into taking into account handling the different and disparate groups that come in as far as the staff training and the approaches that you have. You want to care to share to a larger group that which you shared with Deb and I, and I'm not asking you to go on such a deep dive, but it was fascinating enough that I had followed up talking to Deb about it, and I never knew that I just took for granted that it was a one-size-fits-all approach, but that's clearly not your story.
Well, one of the subgroups that we have is Hotel Council, and we meet regularly every month with the hotels that are members, and our hotel members are not limited to Ames only. They're Boone, Nevada, Story City, Ankeny, Johnson, Polk City, Perry. We'll go that way.
Pleasant Hill.
And what we do is address hotel needs and industry needs. Some of that, as Allison mentioned, we did a customer service training this year that was open to membership. But also when we host special groups, we will do specialty training to make sure that our hotels can respond and that the frontline employees can welcome those guests. So such things as when we hosted beat baseball, we brought in the Department of Blind and they worked with the hoteliers. So this all came about as we talk about other kinds of training that the hotel staff might need to make sure that they're welcoming their guests. So we've done a series of these for different specialty groups and how they might best handle them. So we're very proud of that. And the hotels in this area work extremely well together.
Outstanding.
So.
Great
story.
Yep. Thank you guys so much.
Thanks, Allison.
Next is minutes from March 13th.
I would move that they approve them as presented.
Second.
Motion and a second. Olson.
Aye.
Chief.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Personnel actions as listed, board.
As presented.
Second.
Motion and a second. Chitty.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Claims for March 22nd.
I would like to pull the claim for 4A promotions, and I had made note of what it was, and then the number apparently disappeared from my notes here. Okay. Because 4A promotions is billing for the ad for Story County Conservation in the Ames Bulletin Board.
Okay.
And I own.
You are them.
Well, I'm not. And actually, I'm looking here to make note that when the auditor's report came out this year yesterday, it does show me, and I think it's my error in how I declared this, it shows me as owner of 4C promotions. But I don't own them. They operate the bulletin board for me.
Right.
So, and I get no money from it. So we should probably fix that for next year. But I own the bulletin board. They're basically buying it from me on a contract where they get all the money from it.
Sure, but it's appropriate for you to withdraw.
Refuse myself from this claim.
Is that a motion?
With the exclusion of the $220 payment for 4A.
Second.
Motion and a second. Olson.
Aye.
Chitty.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. You'll move that one claim?
I would move consideration of the claim as so noted.
Yeah, for 4A promotions, and I'll second. Discussion? Chief?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Olson?
Abstain.
Yep. That takes care of claims. Consent agenda, board?
As presented.
I would actually not second that because I'd like to pull two of them.
All right, which one do you want to pull?
I'd like to pull number 7, the Air Corps wireless contract, and number 10, the appointment to the magistrate nominating commission.
All right.
So 10 and 7?
7.
All right, and that's a motion?
Yes.
Now we second that.
Motion and a second. Olson?
Aye.
Cheney?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Florence, let's talk about item number 7.
Yeah, item number 7, the scan has only page 1 and 3. And so the actual financial information, at least that I downloaded, doesn't show number 2. And I sent an email this morning to Barb and copied Alyssa. Okay, I haven't seen that yet. So sorry about that. I was having a meeting at 9:30 also. Alyssa, if you want to come up and clarify it.
Okay. She did send an email that was submitted by the sheriff's office, and she contacted Connie, and the second page had confidential information on it.
But it also has a monetary amount on it.
So that's why it was not scanned. That's the
okay. Does somebody have? Did you print that out somewhere?
No, this is in the packet.
Okay.
Which you can always go to the packet.
I know.
We've got that. Sorry you didn't get that email before the 10 o'clock meeting.
Okay, so could I look at it for a moment then, please? Since I just looked at what was loaded online. Okay, there are 3 options here listed, which is also listed on the first page. And is there a recommendation which one of these we're actually approving?
The 2800.
Option 1.
2800. Okay, I apologize for not getting up to date. I've been on vacation and playing catch up. So,
yeah, so the 1 year instead of the 3 year.
Right.
So the 3 options are 1 year, 2 year, 3 year.
I'll make a motion that we approve it with the 1 year then.
Okay.
Second.
Motion in the second. Olson?
Aye.
Cheney?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. That takes care of that one. Now we're talking about appointment to the Judicial Magistrate Commission. Latifa, can't ever say Latifa's last name.
I Deb?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So this particular appointment, it's Latifa Faithful, who works in the Story County Attorney's Office, and this she's filling an expired term that had been presently filled by Teresa Smith in the Story County Attorney's Office. And with Teresa's move towards other adventures, we take a recommendation from the County Attorney's Office on who to appoint, and Story County Attorney Jessica Reynolds had indicated Latifa to fill that unexpired term.
Okay, and why I pulled it is I think we have some miscommunication or lack of communication again, okay? Because when the email originally came from the court system, it came to the supervisors and to Lucy. I don't know if you were copied on it yet or not. Okay. So then, I responded back and asked Auditor Martin what the process was, and what had been sent was the actual code about how to fill this. And it said that it needs to be filled exactly as it was how the person was appointed at the time, so that we couldn't vary the process. And so my question back was, well, how did we fill it when Teresa was filled it? It was then a previous board. And at that point, Supervisor Sanders emailed back to me, as we'll talk about this. It's ours to fill, because I also asked if Lucy was involved. It's ours to fill. And Supervisor Sanders just said, as we'll talk more about that, about how this process. So, of course, then I went on vacation and came back and just saw this on the consent agenda. So I have no information about how this got on with a name. I mean, I didn't know if we were to nominate people
sure.
for this.
And the answer is we followed the exact same process
right.
that we followed in the past, which is what we're required to do, and that's exactly how Teresa Smith was put on. So Deb and I just dug into it and said, how was Teresa Smith put on? Let's follow that exact same process. That's what we did, and that's where we are.
And I assumed that's what the answer was, but I'm very disappointed in when I specifically asked about, well, how did we feel it last time? There was no communication to me on it. It just showed up here. And is there some legal reason or some
thought that we would have violated what the statute was had I not been communicated, had it not been said, oh, last year the attorney's office made the recommendation, or when Teresa was appointed, the attorney's office made the recommendation, and then we
yeah, so, so my recollection is just slightly, as we've run into it from time to time, is slightly different than yours. When you asked us to you, as I recall, reached out to the auditor and said, oh, is it the auditor who should be putting this on? And I was, actually, I was at my mother-in-law's funeral at the time. Right. And I stepped in and responded and said, no, Loris, this is a Board of Supervisors appointment. Right. We're going to follow our process, and we'll follow our process. We'll talk about it more later. That's exactly what we've done.
Well, because we, cause I pulled it from the idea.
It was on, Teresa Smith was on consent. I mean, we followed our process to the letter, which is exactly what we're required to do, and you're complaining that we followed our process as we're required to do, which is exactly what I thought you were going to do.
I'm complaining that I was never told what our process was the first time. That's what I'm complaining about. I have no problem of, you know, moving and or, you know, voting for her. I'm complaining because when I asked about the process the last time, I never received any answer, and all of a sudden it shows up on the consent agenda. That's my complaint, is there was not, I felt, good communication. All right. So I will then go ahead and make a motion to approve it, but I think it's important that when a supervisor asks about a process, that we get a response on it. So
before I second this, I'd like to hear who you think did not communicate with you.
I believe it was Supervisor Sanders.
I responded and I told you we would follow the exact same process we followed in the past, and that's exactly what we did.
But I asked what that process was in the
communication. And then you went on a cruise.
Well,
and you got back yesterday. Well, yeah, that's just.
Back up, would it have been a problem to have, you said, we followed the same process. I asked what that process was. So was it a problem to communicate, oh, last time it appeared, the county attorney made the recommendation. I had no idea whether I was supposed to, while I was on vacation, try to find someone to.
No problem at all. We followed our process. We put it on the agenda. It's all public. You're acting like there was something that was hidden in this, and there's nothing that was hidden.
I'm not acting about anything hidden. What I'm once again restating is I specifically asked a question that we saw. I mean, I asked it, and you guys were on that, and your response was did not provide information that was useful in how the process was last time. That's my complaint.
Yeah, and so let's just go through it. So I'm at my mother-in-law's funeral. I see you start to run ahead and suggest that the auditor ought to be putting up on the agenda, and I had to stop it because you were getting out over your skis. And so from my mother-in-law's funeral, I stepped in and I said, hey, we're going to follow the process. We'll get it on a future agenda. We'll go. I get back in the office last week, and I go in and I see Deb, and I think, and Deb, just correct me if I'm wrong, I think what I said is, we need to see about getting this filled. We need to follow the exact same process that we used to have Teresa Smith. Will you handle it and get it on an agenda for us? And you did. And that's the entire extent of the conversation. There was no attempt to leave you out of anything. We were just trying to fill a vacant position using the same process we've always used.
First of all, I'd like to point out that with me asking, since they sent it to us and Auditor Lucy Martin, I was asking if Lucy was involved in the process since it was sent there, okay? So I did not get out ahead of my skis as you're putting it there. I was asking about a process that was new to me, okay? And seeking information. And so this communication was dropped. It was not provided. So, and I think the problem
was
that Deb, I don't think that, I believe that Deb, had she known that I did not know the process, that I believe that Deb Shildoff would have followed up.
I don't have any doubt at all, but we just followed the process. We got a motion. How about seconding it so we can
Deb, I got a question. Deb,
yeah.
When was Teresa appointed? When did her term start on this?
January 1st of 2014.
So Stephen Holmes did this, and then The appointment was vetted through the board, and they put it on the consent agenda at that time, voted on, and she had been there ever since her leaving, right?
Correct. And just for the record, she was appointed prior to my current role.
Right.
Yeah, it was part of our first of January organizational meeting where we make all those appointments.
Right. This conversation aside, this process prior to pulling and talking about it was what was done previous.
That was my understanding, and then I was given Latifah's name to add to the consent agenda to fill the vacancy. So
Jessica did what Stephen did to get to the same nomination to give it to us for approval.
Correct.
On our consent agenda. That is as I understand it, and I will give you a second with that clarification.
Okay. Further discussion?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Olson.
Aye.
Chitty.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Latifah is appointed. Thanks, Dale.
Thank you.
That gets us to public hearing items. And we've got discussion consideration of Resolution 1888, 15-foot wide walkway between Lot 5 and Lot 6.
Good morning, Jerry Moore.
This has been kind of an interesting one, Jerry.
It has been. Okay, there's two processes set out in the Story County Land Development Regulations to vacate an item that's a part of an official subdivision plat. Proprietors or lot owners in the development can bring a request forward to vacate anything that's a part of the plat, or it can be in this case, the Board of Supervisors that can vacate an item such as an alley, an easement, a right-of-way, something that has been conveyed for a public purpose that has been determined not to be no longer useful. So this process involved discussions with the representative from the county attorney's office and the interested party applicant, Ward Wester, his attorney. The 15-foot wide walkway and utility easement area was shown as a part of the road right-of-way in the subdivision plat, and so therefore it was determined after this discussion that the county would shepherd the process. So on the 20th, the Board of Supervisors took action to initiate the vacation process. So Board of Supervisors is the applicant, interested party, Ward Wester. He lives in Ames currently. The property owner is Forest Park Property Management, LLC, Fred Chitty, with a Nevada address. Again, the request came about. Mr. Wester is interested in acquiring lot 5 and lot 6 of the Forest Park subdivision. He's interested in acquiring those two lots and the walkway and easement area to build a new house and an accessory structure. He's also interested in exchanging the walkway and easement area and providing an easement along the north portion of what will be the new lot. The walkway and easement area again, was a part of the original plat, which was recorded in June 29 of 1978. So this takes us to where we are located. We're south of the city of Nevada, about 2 miles in this area. We're west of 19th Street, north of 270th Street. Closer view, the subdivision is outlined in red for you. The area to be vacated is on the west side of Parkview Lane, which is the main north-south road that extends through the development. There's a closer view. So the area to be vacated, again, is right here. There's actually a dwelling on the north side of Lot 5 and Lot 6 and the south side. About the same time that this house was constructed, they divided what was Lot 6, and that kind of somewhat created the current orientation. But you also see at the same time this Forest Park subdivision was platted, it also included about 18 lots on the east side of the road. And you can see some narrow walkways which were to extend from two cul-de-sac roads. It also included easement area. That area has since been adjoined into one parcel. It's currently in row crop production, owned by the property owner, Mr. Chitty. But this area could be resurrected again and could be developed. So the beauty in relocating it is it would line up more with the area on the east side of the road if that area, if there's interest in
ever did, and it would be back onto a property boundary, which is what its original intent was,
right.
But the northern house bought half of that other lot, which was what threw all this off.
Correct. So this shows you what Mr. Wester is proposing to do. Again, he would like to acquire lot 5, lot 6, and the walkway and utility easement area. He would like to construct a single-family dwelling in the south portion. This is zoned R1. A transitional residential district is a 40-foot minimum front yard setback, 35-foot rear, 10-foot side. He's proposing to build a detached accessory structure in the northwest portion of what would be the new lot. And you can see it would be on where the current location is of the walkway in the easement area. And then this area here would be reserved for the septic system. Access would be in this location. So this shows you the plat of survey. This has been corrected to show the what's to be vacated and the proposed location. Again, the northern portion, north 15 feet for the walkway and the utility easement. We're into site photos. We're looking north. This is the road, Parkview Lane. This is the south residence. Looking at the south end of the property, there's a laugh. With an arrow, this is approximately where the access would be into the lot. The other lath here shows you where the existing 15-foot walkway and utility easement area is. This is looking toward the north portion of the property, looking back toward the south, southwest. There is a park with a pond area to the west. That's looking at that area, which is what the access area was for. This is looking at the dwelling to the north. This is that area on the east side of the road. It's currently in row crop production. We did have a conceptual review with Mr. Wester February 8th, had review comments February 23rd that we provided. We asked that the plat of survey show the new location. It has been shown. That a written easement be prepared. It was prepared by his attorney. We're asking for information to be included that refers to the area also as a future easement, which I understand that is happening. And then we talk about what the process was. The board takes action by resolution, naming the person where this property would be provided to. The Environmental Health Department liked the idea of adjoining those parcels because it provides more space for a conventional septic system, protects the watershed. Auditor's office had a similar comment about showing the new location on the plat of survey, which was shown. We did send notices to property owners within a quarter of a mile of the easement area. On February 20th, we also communicated with the Central Iowa Water, Alliant Energy, CenturyLink, Iowa Telecom, and Mediacom. We only received back word from Alliant Energy that they support the request to vacate. We also received, somebody came in the office and looked at what was being proposed to obtain better information about the request. And so this leads us to the points to consider for the board. Again, it does not appear that it was used for utility purposes. There's question, too, about whether or not it was used to access, to provide for a true walking area
to
get back to the pond.
Yep.
And then, again, the reason for it is to allow Mr. Wester to acquire lots 5 and 6 and this 15-foot walkway area and the easement area and build a home and accessory structure. And he's going to provide a new location. So the Planning and Zoning Commission on the 7th There was the property owners to the north do support the vacation. They did have questions about why the new location, and it was discussed at that time that if that area to the east ever gets platted, it will be uniform in line with that area on the east side of the road. So it's for future planning purposes. And so that brings us to what the vote was. It was a 6-0 vote to approve with conditions that the plat be updated, and it has been updated, and that the written easement be provided. And my understanding is that information is being updated. So that really brings us to what the alternative is, and today you can approve if you support this request without conditions, which is the alternative one. The Story County Board of Supervisors approves the 15-foot wide walkway and utility easement as put forth in admin 1-18. That's resolution 18-88.
Perfect. Well, before we get there, we'll do the public hearing. But before we get to public hearing, questions for Jared?
None.
Very straightforward.
None.
I'll open public hearing. Ask if anyone would like to address resolution 1888. Seeing no one moving to the microphone, close the public hearing, turn to the board for action.
I think, considering, Brad's my sad cousin, that said, this has been a development that has languished. He has not chosen to pursue it. We were 40 years out and when it was brought into being. I don't see a problem with moving a designation on a map to another designation on a map. I appreciate the fact somebody wants to build out there. It's a nice place. I think it will someday be much more than it is. And I would support. I'm not going to make a motion right now because I want to hear what everybody else says. But I have, Jerry's staff once again did a deep dive. We talked to everybody. Alliant doesn't have a problem. The other utility providers don't have a problem with the proposed change. I don't see anything not to, you have a 6-0 vote on your planning and zoning.
Really straightforward. Lord, should I make a motion?
He said he was going to wait to hear what everybody had to say.
I realized I didn't have a question, but I'll make the motion first. I move alternative one that we approve the 15-foot feet.
Are we having the hearing? I'm sorry.
Huh?
The hearing?
We did the hearing.
We did the hearing. Okay.
You didn't miss? You probably didn't catch all the testimony?
It was a toe tapper. They're going to talk about it a lot.
I think I was at 15 feet wide walkway, and utility easement vacation is put forth in case admin 0118 and resolution 1888.
Yep. So you moved resolution 1888. Will you second it?
Yes. I second.
Further discussion, Laura, she said you had a question.
I do, and it's fast, too, because I downloaded my packet off of the Internet. What I've got in front of me from the staff memo has item 2 highlighted as the recommendation. So that was, I moved
always
one.
Always working these things.
Okay, I just want to make sure that I was doing the right one.
Okay, thank you.
All right, good?
That's good.
Good. Olson.
Aye.
Cheney.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Resolution 1888 passes. Thanks, Jerry.
Thank you, Jerry.
We are two additional items. Discussion and consideration of the draft CIP, Capital Improvement Plan. The incomparable plan.
The incomparable.
Dan, what's going on with that?
Happy spring.
Happy, it doesn't
feel
like
that's
spring.
Right.
It is first day, isn't it?
It isn't. Good morning.
Good morning.
Everyone should have had a copy of the draft capital improvements plan that was on the agenda, I hope. I actually don't have a PowerPoint presentation this morning. You've seen, it would be redundant of what I've shown you several times already. Just some quick introductions and comments. The CIP is a multi-year guide that helps Story County with construction and improvement of county facilities and acquisition of equipment. We first started doing strategic or capital improvements planning back in 2013 following the adoption of the May 2013 strategic plan. We've done it every year since. It does run on a fiscal year. So we're looking at the current year, fiscal year 18, and then year 1 would be fiscal year 19, all the way to fiscal year 23 being year 5, and there are projects throughout that. The draft CIP does have some changes this year than in an organization that has in the past. On page 6, we've added a list of projects that have been completed since that 2013 first iteration of the CIP. There are 23 items, I believe, if I came and read my writing.
that have been completed over the past five odd years. Items from fiscal year 18, so again, our current year, are actually identified throughout the plan with a check mark and a circle, so you can know where those ones have been completed. There are six that are already done of the 14 projects that remain for this fiscal year. It is laid out, the overall organization, by fiscal year. I think next year we might break it down into department as well. That might help out. There are some additions to the draft since it was released for public review in late January. Those are found on page 10. And these follow the budget work sessions, and they were all identified in the budget that you adopted last week. The purchase and installation of emergency communication center furniture on page 10 is a new item that was not included, as well as page 14. All four of those on that page are items that were, again, included in the budget that was approved. So the Carroll Prairie acquisition, Hickory Grove Park trail extension, the sidewalk improvements at McFarland Park, and Sensitive Areas inventory update. So those were not in the review that was out for public comment, but they were part of the public, or the work sessions with conservation. I did send this out for public review. I put it on our website. I sent it to all the libraries, City Hall, Scoville, County. I think we sent out 250 copies. I haven't received any feedback through the process, whether online with the comment sheet or back emails from the library. With that, I recommend approval, and I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Yeah, so good process, Leanne. Thank you so much. I just think this is such an important component that we've been doing this now, 4 years, 5 years?
5 years.
We've been doing this 5 years, and I'm an absolute believer that if you want to know what's important to any organization, look at their budget. Look at where they spend their dollars, how they spend their dollars, and what's important to them. For Story County, it's pretty simple, right? We're a $40 million entity, and about half of that we spend in personnel costs, somewhere in the $20 million range in personnel costs. Our operations take anywhere from 35 to 40%, and the reality is what we're seeing over the last 5 years is our capital projects is somewhere somewhere in that 10 to 15% of our budget. But if you look at these larger ticket items, I think it tells you a lot about who Story County is and what we are aspirationally. I think it's completely appropriate that we get this in the public's hands, and frankly, that we get it in front of the board as much as possible. Previous boards, I'm looking at Lisa Markley because she had worked with boards forever. I think she started working here when she was 12.
I did.
And previous boards would consider these larger purchases kind of in a silo, one at a time, without looking holistically at what's happening to the organization and the choices we have to make. This allows us to really compare and contrast what our priorities are and where we're going to spend dollars. And I just think it's a key. We just announced that we passed our sixth balanced budget in Rome. We're the only county in the state to have done it the last 6 years. I think this is a key, not the only piece of that, but this is a key piece of that. And I think it just really helps us do the job we've got to do. So thank you, Leanne. Questions or comments for Leanne?
I'm modestly disappointed, but not at all surprised that you didn't get any reaction to it electronically. I know that you see people walking out with it because we put paper copies of this out. Mm-hmm. It really does reflect the values that we have collectively gotten to, and we've stack ranked them, prioritized them, date, put them on a track and give it a date. It is not a static thing. We do move these things around as dollars and opportunities present themselves. As Leanne just pointed out, we have had some things that we had the ability with ending funds to pay for that we don't have the green check marks to. But if anybody wants to know what the Board of Supervisors does in Story County and where they put their values, this would be a good place to start.
I did have one citizen contact me yesterday
and expressed asking questions about the Tedesco Environmental Learning Center, the amount of money we're spending, especially projected out with the $2.5 million that we haven't already issued TIF bonds for. I explained to him about, you know, where we kind of verbally all had expressed where we would stop and where either private grants or private money needed to step up if, in fact, we actually reached that $5.5 million point, and explained some things to him. He also expressed some concern about us, the $250,000 for the solar cabin that we, Conservation is looking at putting up at David's Lake. However, he was concerned $250,000 seemed exorbitant for a cabin, and then I explained that the cabin would sleep 10 or 12, and it wasn't really a cabin per se. It was more of a mini family type of either kind of a reunion place or for several people to come and spend the weekend, and that seemed to satisfy him.
How is our friend Arden doing?
He's doing well. Thank you. Yes.
Well, clearly the vast majority, I mean, just for anybody that doesn't know how we did this, this was a issue brought to the board through the budgeting process by the Conservation Department. We, a previous board, had the opportunity to serve on it through negotiations with the Dakota Access Pipeline, took in $1.6 million. What did we do at that point? I got to vote for this. I was pretty pleased. We put that into our budget in a escrow existence where it is only to be used by the Conservation Department. The $250,000, $190,000 comes out of that in those dollars. They're not, you know, county general tax dollars. And Loris and I think we're pretty full-throated when we were talking to Mike and the board in the sense that they have such tremendous success in going out there and leveraging, finding private dollars, finding grant dollars, that if we could back away the $60,000 finishing component to this, that they would. Okay. So this, I think, is still a little bit fluid in the fact that there might not be the exposure on the general dollars that it is. But I am very pleased, and I'm sorry that Arden, who is a member of the community up there, would think that this is not a good addition to his community.
Well, actually, then when I explained that to him, when I explained the Dakota Access money, I just kind of, said, you know, maybe this is an estimate, and, you know, but the majority of this are not taxpayer funds. This is from an agreement, okay? Mm-hmm. And that made him feel better. I think also I did extend to him, and I'm sure this extends to anyone who still has questions about the Tedesco Environmental Learning Center. I explained to him, remember, I'm the one who has been dragged along kicking and screaming and asking lots of questions over the process, and that I had been convinced. And I offered to arrange to have him see the presentation that was given at the Outdoor Alliance's annual meeting just a couple weeks ago. Luke, who was here earlier, gave a great presentation about why some of the things that were done and what was coming next. And he declined to have it done specially for him, but he said that were there other opportunities, I promised I'd let him know about that, to see that. And he would listen. And also, when the weather gets a little better and you guys are ready, Ryan, to take me out of the gator to see what's been done so far, I'll invite him along. At least he can see what the money is being spent on and why.
I think it's great. I think the more the merrier thing will this. Does anybody else find it ironic, by the way, than just me, that we're using? So a $250,000 solar cabin, right, since it sleeps in, it's not really a cabin, but a solar-powered, not off the grid, but could be off the grid, is being funded by Dakota Access Oil money, and basically our general fund dollars are coming from the wind towers. So we're using those two things to fund the solar power cabin. I think that's just, I like the irony in that. So anything further? Or can we?
No.
I take a motion to approve the draft capital improvements plan.
I would move that we approve the draft capital improvements plan as presented this morning.
Second.
Motion and second. Further discussion? Olson?
Aye.
Cheney?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Thanks, Leanne. Good job, as always.
Thank you.
Next is, we got, how many? Three in a row here. These are all budgetary items that we're pulling forward. Discussing consideration first for purchase of a 60-inch motor with trade-in for conservation. From Better Equipment for $8,522.19. Ryan?
You bet. So we went through our budget process and requested this as part of our equipment rotation for FY19. We gained, that went through our conservation board process, and then brought forward for the Board of Supervisors. You guys recommended we switch that back to our FY18 budget. That's where we're at here today.
Yeah, and so, you know, those of you who are here regularly, you hear this all the time, but I'm going to say it for those that aren't. We work really, really hard through the budget process that if we have capacity in our current fiscal year to buy something that we would purchase in the next fiscal year anyway, we try to pull it forward rather than having this mindset of, oh, we've got this money left over, let's buy some things that we don't really need. We like the idea of shifting forward. That's what this is. Questions for Ryan?
None.
None.
I take a motion.
I would move for purchase of a 60-inch mower with trade-in from Story for the conservation from Brenner Equipment for $8,520.19.
I would second.
Motion and second. Cheney?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Same exact item, except now we're talking about a 72-inch mower for $11,735.
Move consideration for a 72-inch mower from Story for the conservation from Brenner Equipment for $11,735.27.
I would second.
Motion and a second. You need to add anything or are we good, Ryan?
We're good.
Cheney?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. And now we're talking about some watershed signage, which actually is a project I'm really excited about. Ryan, take us through this one.
You bet. So this is an agreement between Story County Conservation and Prairie Rivers of Iowa for informational signage in our watershed and in our creeks to be placed along our Huck 10 watersheds and then slip bridges. So it's my understanding this is part of an outreach effort to educate our citizens and people passing through on our watersheds so that they know they're there and we can continue educating our citizens.
So a huge educational component, right? Many, I wouldn't say most, lots of people don't know that they are always in a watershed. We're in a watershed now. You're in a watershed where you live. You're in a watershed everywhere you drive. Everybody's in a watershed all the time, but people don't recognize that. And so along the lines of education, as we've started the Squaw Creek Watershed Authority, we're in process of ramping up what will be something along the Kegley Branch. Probably won't rename that, but it'll be something along those. And now we're waiting with great anticipation for our watershed assessments for all of our Huck 12s in Story County. Really making an effort to educate the public on what watersheds are, where they are. And what's exciting about this project to me is it's really two different locations that we're talking about putting signs. One, signing our major name streams on paved county roads. So when you cross a bridge, you'll know what stream you're crossing. But the second one is even more exciting because it's going to be on the uphill of everything, right? It's going to be at the top of everything. Or you're now leaving the Squaw Creek watershed and entering the Indian Creek watershed or whatever it is, and start to educate people that wherever you are in Story County, you're in a watershed somewhere. And I'm just really excited that conservation has decided to partner with Prairie Rivers to try to get this done, and I appreciate shifting these $22,000 forward into this year when we have some good capacity. Questions or comments for Ryan?
Yes, I took my son through North and South Dakota for college choices here last spring, summer, that what you notice when you leave Iowa and you go into those states, they do this.
Uh-huh.
And because after a while you want to get off the interstate and kind of say, well, I'm out in Brookings, South Dakota, or I'm in Fargo, North Dakota, and whatnot, and they actually have already gotten there, uh-huh. And it struck me, after having seen it, this is something I would be very happy to do, and if there are no other questions, I would make a motion.
I do have a question.
Would you second the motion? And then
yeah, I'll second the motion.
Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. So, Ryan, when we discussed this project during the budget workshop, I remember an amount about $40,000 that we talked about, and this is only $22,000. Is the remaining $18,000 the actual cost of the signs to order from what Prison Industries or whatever?
That's not my understanding.
This covers the signs plus the placement.
Yeah, no, I think we've already approved buying the materials for the signs, and this is the rest of the project.
Okay,
is what I think.
The installation.
Yep.
Okay.
No, I think you remember that right.
Yep. Okay, thank you. All right, I'm done.
All right, anything further?
None.
It's a cool project. Chee?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Passes. Thank you, Ryan. Good job.
As a conservation department, we're excited to have a county that supports better quality. So,
you got one. Thanks, ma'am. Next item is discussion consideration of resolution
1889. Yes.
Good morning.
Hello. Hey. The Wormsea Hill.
Wormsea, okay.
Residential parcel subdivision. So, property is located south of Nevada in Grant Township. The owner is Maple Avenue 239 LC. Josh Wirtz is manager of that LC. And this is in the A1X Cultural District, Nevada Schools, Story County Ambulance, Nevada Fire, Consumers Energy, Iowa Regional Utility Association, which is the new name of Central Iowa Water Association, and in the Indian Creek Watershed.
All right.
So this is the locational map. You can see it from the very far southeastern corner of Grant Township. Here is Nevada to the north. Surrounding land use, the subject property located here. There is a subdivision, the Black Agricultural Subdivision, surrounding it. So the two-lot subdivision, there are two houses. You also have the Jeanette Heritage Area, which is managed by Story County Conservation. You have some large agricultural parcels. There are 26 parcels within a half mile. 8 have dwellings, and 11 meet the A1 Agricultural District minimum lot size of 35 acres to construct a dwelling. Some background, the existing parcel was created in 2002 through a plat survey that split off the farmstead from the farmland. This is prior to the Black's agricultural subdivision that occurred. This is a 1880 built house, and there is a detached garage. There's frontage on 620th Avenue. And they will be using a shared access easement over this existing drive to access lot 2, which I'll show you in just a second. I will note that this is a very old house constructed before we had zoning code. Doesn't meet front setback requirements, but it is a legal non-conforming use. So as long as they don't encroach any further, it's okay. So this is the proposed vision. You can see the line, and this is an approximation. Goes approximately down the half of the parcel, so you get two 1.39 net acre lots. The current land use is residential, and it's also designated as rural residential in RC2C plan. Here's the plat. You can see the access easement is shown on the plat. We have requested a written easement as well, and that's recommended as a condition that we receive that before we record. Some site photos. This is looking north at 620th, east across 620th, the adjacent farm field, south on 620th, at the farm field in the Jeanette Heritage area. This is looking south at proposed lot 2, some grass. Southeast at proposed lot 2. Here's looking northwest from across 620th at proposed lot 2. You can see the neighbor's house and some barns to the west of proposed lot 2. This is the existing dwelling on proposed lot 1. Another view, the detached garage. Here's a view looking west at the shared access. We have applicable regulations. These are criteria you have to meet to be able to do a residential parcel subdivision. We can go through these if you have questions, but in this case, the proposal does meet all of these, including minimum lot size of 1 acre, that there's a farmstead in existence. Only 2 development lots are being created. We're in the A1 district. There is road frontage and an access easement. And so we have a few comments. Story County Environmental Health noted that there are 2 wells on proposed lot 1 with the existing house. They have no other concerns. We noted several requirements related to home businesses in case that route is pursued, just that the person that lives in the dwelling on proposed lot 2 must be employed in any home business. And we also noted that if an accessory structure is built in advance of a dwelling, that within 2 years a dwelling must also be built on the property or that accessory structure converted to have living quarters. And this information is just based off conversations of what the owner's plans might be for this lot. We sent notification letters to the public, emergency services, utilities on March 12th.
we have received one comment from the neighbor to the west in opposition. I provided you with a letter we received as well. So again, just a few points of analysis. All requirements for a residential subdivision plat are met. The principles of the cornerstone cap zone C2C plan are met. We have access and shared access easement. We are recommending a condition that they provide us a written version of that access easement before we record. Both lots will be 1.39 acres, net acres in size. And the subject property is not in agricultural use currently. So with that, we recommend alternative two, which is approval of the residential subdivision plat Worthy Hill, as put forth in subdivision 020-17 with the following conditions that the written access easement is provided prior to recording. With that, any questions?
And that's the shared driveway.
Yes.
Yep.
The applicant is here and a neighbor is here as well. If you have questions for them.
Yeah, we'd love to hear from anybody who would like to speak to us. Board, any questions that you have before we hear from anybody who'd like to speak?
Shocked to hear the house was built in 1880.
It's kind of cool.
That's almost original issue around here.
I have no questions for you.
Okay. Anybody want to address us on this? Okay. Board, what's your pleasure? Resolution 1889.
I have no problems with it. I understand the unease, but being somebody that lives out on the family farm, you get neighbors when ground becomes available, and that's just the world we live in. I mean, I guess why we don't want to give away any farm ground that we don't have to, this does not go there, and I think that I have no DOEs about adding new neighbors. So I would move consideration resolution 1889, the Wurtsey Hill residential parcel subdivision as presented by Planning and Development.
Have a motion.
With the condition?
With the condition.
The presenter. Okay. Yep. All right. Yeah. I'll second.
Motion and a second. Further discussion. Chidi.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. 1889 passes.
Thank you. Got it.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right, we're making progress. We're on page six now. Next is discussion consideration of Landis Cooperative Site Development Plan and Zoning Permit Application. Emily.
Okay, so this is a commercial zoning permit and site development plan application before you today by Landis Cooperative. They are proposing a grain receiving, storage, and loadout facility southwest of the city of Collins. This will include three steel bins, receiving building, a scale, dryer, and automated loadout. They are planning future improvements on the site, including an office building and potential additional storage and grain bins. So this is the subject property. This is the city of Collins here, just about a quarter mile south of the corporate limits, on the south side of Highway 210 and the west side of Highway 65. As you can see here, the property is zoned A2, agribusiness. This is an aerial view of the property here, Highway 65, 210. And the part of the site plan and part of the reason we wanted to bring it forward to you today is that there are Landis Cooperative is in the process of doing what we would consider a parcel line adjustment through a plat of survey to enlarge their parcel by 150 feet on the west side and then the south side. So the updated site plan on the agenda center does show these proposed lines. We have no zoning permits will be issued before that survey has been recorded. I believe that they have had surveyors out in the field last week, but if you have any questions about that, I will let you speak to Brett Bell, who is here from Landis. This is the existing flat storage grain storage on the site. So this would be in addition to the existing. The access to the site is off of Highway 210. We did communicate with the
Iowa Department of Transportation, and they had no concerns about the proposal. Just some site photos. This is the existing flat storage area. Looking southeast, toward the proposed improvements. And then looking east toward Highway 65 here. Highway 210 is up here. Oops. So just some images of the intersection. This is looking south on Highway 65. And then looking west toward 210. This is the access off of 210. You can see there is a paved apron. The site plan shows gravel on the site. And then this is looking east toward Highway 65. So this is just some renderings that the applicant provided to us. You can see the three grain bins here, the elevator, the dryer is on the other side. Those grain bins there, the receiving building here, and we'll take a look at the site plan. Here are the three proposed grain bins right now, the existing flat storage, receiving building is here, and then the dryer is here. They are with the parcel line adjustment. They will be meeting all of our setback requirements, of, which are 50 feet from all lot lines in the A2 district. They are also proposing to do some grading here for future storage, but the truck traffic would enter off of Highway 210 and come down. There's a scale proposed here, and then they would come here to the receiving building and then back up and around. The future proposed office building is located right here, just north of the existing grain storage. There will also be an LP tank located on site that will have a 6-foot secured fence around it. They are also providing on the site plan the required landscaping from the county general site planning standards of 20% of the impervious surface being added. They will plant that native grass. And can't see it on here, but they are showing silt fence for the construction. This is just an elevation drawing. The total height of this structure here is about 175 feet. Story County Planning and Development did receive a phone call on March 13th from an adjacent property owner expressing concerns about the traffic increase, the impact on their view, and then the noise from the proposed improvements. We did pass this information along to the project manager. So it's planning and development staff's recommendation that the Board of Supervisors approve the site development plan and zoning permit applications for the proposed Landis Cooperative receiving, storage, and load out facility.
Super.
The applicant is here if you have any questions for him.
So you're proposing flat storage on the east side of this. All right, is that correct?
Well, let's have you come up. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you.
I've been through all that.
I'll keep asking the question. So are you proposing concrete there on that flat?
So the flat?
In the northeast corner.
Can we get a name?
Brett Bell with Landis Cooperative. So the northeast corner is for future upright storage.
Upright.
Correct.
Okay.
The southeast corner, the current project is for three bins that will be considered upright storage. The current storage out there today to the southwest, we consider that flat storage. It's a 900,000 bushel bunker.
Mm-hmm.
It's been out there for 10 years, Jason, approximately 10 years, and we're simply adding to this current site.
Okay. And you're picking up an additional 150 feet both to the west and to the south?
That's correct. It's a little tight given the plans we have for this plant, so we decided to add an additional 150 feet. My understanding is the updated survey will be delivered to the Story County Courthouse today.
Okay.
What's the capacity, storage capacity on these three bins?
2.2 million approximately.
Oh. So you're going to continue that flat there on the west side for the time being?
We will.
Okay.
Well, the long-term plan has it in.
Well, I'm just saying, it's just that, well, that's, I would start it off by asking what he's doing with the east proposed.
Yeah.
And you're talking vertical storage there.
No, the flat in the southwest corner of the property will continue to be run as it currently is.
Okay, but on the east, though?
The east will be upright storage.
Okay. Three with a plan of adding
three
two
with
more.
Potentially adding two more, which is yet to be determined.
I hope you're that successful.
And then potential office space.
We've
right
got
in
a,
the center
correct.
Of the
We've got an office out there today. It's designed for the purpose, which is seasonal.
Right.
We want to put a better office out there. And that's also on the plans. But we need to come back and get permission to do that. We took that out of scope for the purposes of this project.
Okay. No, this is a natural extension of what they're doing. I'm glad that your board thinks that this is a worthy investment.
They're very excited about it.
And I would not stand in their way. And if anybody has any further questions, I would propose that we accept the Landis Cooperative Site Development Plan and the zoning permit application extended.
I would second.
Motion second. Is there anyone else who'd want to address us today? So we have one concern from an adjacent property owner. Anybody else want to weigh in on this at all? Yeah, Jeff, come on.
Yes, sir. I'm not living in that area.
Come on down before we can pick you up on the microphone. Start by introducing yourself, Mr. Longnecker.
Yes, yeah, Jeff Longnecker. I haul grain in that area, farm over in that area. It's a must. The facilities in Collins are in terrible shape. Maxwell's not far behind. I see this really being a real benefit to that community.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Well, I thought in numbers, I thought I heard you say you can handle 900,000 there
flat.
With the three on the flat.
Today we can handle 900. We will be adding 2.2 million.
And with an this additional potential.
Potentially another 1.5 okay. With the two to the north.
And I guess it escaped me, and I'm sorry if it happened, it got said, but the cost of this project is going to be what?
All in. Approximately $13.7 million.
Substantial.
It's substantial.
Good for that area of the county.
And, yep. And to reference your comment earlier about capital improvements, this is a clear statement of where we intend to go invest in the future of our farmers in this area. So.
Let's get going.
Good. We got a motion and a second. Morris, anything further you'd
none?
Like?
No,
thank you.
All right. Cheney.
Aye.
Olson. Sanders, aye. Passes.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks.
Good luck.
You guys have a great day. Don't feel like you need to stick around. We're getting near the end. next is discussion and consideration of Resolution 1891.
Okay, so this is a request for another residential parcel subdivision. The applicant here was David Nelson with Whitfield and Eddy Attorney's Office out of Des Moines. The property owners of this parcel are Jeff and Twyla Longnecker. The entire parcel is just over 12 acres and is located in Union Township. It's currently zoned A1, and the city of Cambridge is within 2 miles of the proposed division. It's in Ballard Community School District, the Story County Ambulance District, Cambridge Fire, Consumers Energy, and the South Trunk River Watershed District. So the current land use of the property, this again is the just over 12 acre site. The current land use is residential and agricultural row crops. This aerial imagery does not show the existing dwelling on it, so I've indicated it there for you. That was built last year. This area is designated as agricultural conservation by the C2C plan. Area to the west and south, here where you can see the trees, is designated as natural area. There's a little bit of natural area on the very western and southern just about on the parcel lines. The natural area designation, but the proposed improvement should not impact that. There are currently three dwellings, including the one on the subject property, that take access through an access easement. That's a 50-foot access easement along the north side of the subject property. This is 305th here and 595th here. Just zooming in a little bit, you can see proposed lot 1 to the east, and that would include the entire 50-foot easement. And then proposed lot 2, which would again take access through that easement. Proposed lot 1 is 9.15 net acres, buildable for a single family dwelling. At this time, however, the property owners are proposing to leave it in agricultural production. Proposed lot 2 is a 3 net acre lot, which is proposed to the west, and it contains the existing single family dwelling. Here is the plat, or the residential parcel subdivision plat. I'm going to turn it here so that north is up against proposed lot 1 and proposed lot 2 and the 50-foot access easement along the north side. And just a little bit of background in for this area. In 1955, the south half of the quarter-quarter, as well as a portion of the quarter-quarter to the west, were divided and sold. The subject property was created in 1971 when these 12 acres were divided off the west half of the parcel. So the surrounding land use is all A1. There are seven adjacent properties, 4 that contain dwellings, 38 parcels within a half a mile. 11 of these parcels have dwellings. There are 14 parcels within a half mile that meet the minimum lot size requirements for a single family dwelling in the A1 district, which is that 35-acre minimum. Swine Genetics International is located just about 650 feet to the south there, and you're approximately a half mile from the Cambridge corporate limits. This is looking west at the subject property from 595th Avenue. The access easement follows the driveway here. This is looking west at the property from 595th Street. The single family dwelling is located here. This is looking southwest at the subject property. This area that's not being used for agricultural row crops is the 595th Street right-of-way area. So this is looking north along 595th Avenue, looking southeast at the intersection of 305th Street and 595th Avenue, and then looking south at proposed lot 2 from the access easement on proposed lot 1. This is looking west toward an adjacent dwelling. This dwelling and this dwelling also take access through that access easement. This is looking north from the subject property, as you can see in livestock production. I won't go over the regulations, but they're here. Let me know if you have any questions. Just some comments from the interagency review team. The assessor's office will review the classification of lot 1 and lot 2 for the 2019 assessment. There are just some corrections to the plat to be made from the auditor's office. And Story County Planning and Development just asked if there are any restrictive covenants being proposed for the subdivision, and there are not. We did send notice letters out on March 13th. To property owners within a quarter mile. We did receive a phone call and a visit, actually, from a nearby property owner with questions regarding the subdivision name, the access easement maintenance, and generally the process about converting a driveway to a public road, just some general questions about things like that. So, for analysis, all the requirements of the residential parcel subdivision plat are met. Proposed lot 2 will take access through an existing shared access easement that extends west of 595th Avenue. The shared access easement was recorded in 2007 and is shown on the plat. Some agricultural row crops may be removed from production if a dwelling is constructed on proposed lot 1. However, the plan for the near future is to leave it in production. If a dwelling is constructed on proposed lot 1, there will be 5 dwellings within the original quarter-quarter. There are a total of 38 parcels located in a half mile, and 11 of these contain single-family dwellings. So it is Planning and Development staff's recommendation that the Board of Supervisors approve the Weirson Ridgewood Lane residential parcel subdivision as proposed, and that is alternative number one, approving resolution 1891.
Good questions for Emily. Well done, well put together. Only thing I'd say, Jeff, I know that it's not your intent to build anything on lot one at this point.
Right now,
I would hope that if there is something built on lot one, we're going to take access off of the existing access rather than cutting a new access into 595th Street.
We can't. Okay.
Yeah, just.
Actually, I did have another one of my daughters.
Come on up. So this is Jeff Longnecker again.
One of my other daughters hit me up this weekend. Well, can I have part of that to build one? So I don't know. Maybe we are going to build another house someday.
Yeah. Well, I would expect if this action happens, you can expect someday there's going to be a house there.
I would about guarantee you that.
I just think it'd be a real problem if we tried to cut an access straight over.
I don't want to do that at all. I want to get the same access.
Thank you.
Other questions? Anything else for Jeff?
None.
Can I get a motion?
Move consideration of 1891 Weirson Ridgewood Lane residential parcel subdivision, SUV 03-18, as presented.
I would second.
Motion and a second. Further discussion? Chief?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. 1891 passes.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. All right. So, next we're moving to departmental reports, but we're going to take a 3-minute recess first. And we'll come back with Jody from facilities.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
I'm not sure where I said we're going to discuss this later.
Oh, I will handle getting out of this area. Okay. All right. Thanks. Okay.
All right, Joby.
Come on down.
At this point, I
can
say good afternoon.
You are. Joby, I'm eating a snack while you talk, man.
That's okay. I don't mind. All right, well, let's get rolling right into it. Just start with the work order side of things. We had 126 of them at the administration building. 5 of them were on an on-call scenario. 32 at the group homes with 5 as an on-call. Conservation, we had 19, 4 being on-call. HSC, we had 84, 13 on-call. Work orders, jail, 56 work orders, with 12 additional is on call, and the justice center, like complex as a whole, was 78 work orders and 9 on calls. Animal control, we just had 5 work orders, no on calls. Engineers building, 3 work orders, 0 on calls. The total of 403 work orders and 48 on-call work orders. And this winter we had 22 days that we come in early for snow removal.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Some other things that we've done this quarter is Al Pearson retired, and I took over as the director.
In our infinite wisdom.
We hired a maintenance tech, Matt Miller. Also had Rick Carter retire this quarter. And then in that process, we promoted one of our custodians, Danny Harrison, to a maintenance tech. We replaced some carpet in the lower level courts hallway where the judges' offices are. It's the Justice Center. Replaced some carpet out at Conservation in McFarland Park for the office area. And got some yearly fire alarm inspections completed at Human Services Center, the Administration Building, and the Justice Center. Spent a lot of time with Heat Pump 42, which is the one on the roof of the jail that we're in the process of getting replaced. So, and then we had the IT heat pump go down on us this winter, bearing failure, so we had to use a portable. We have air conditioner written down, but it's a portable heater. It does both. And that's currently a heat pump we're also replacing. In fiscal year 19, we had both furnaces go down at the Hazel Group home this winter, and they were combustion air fans. Placed fan motor and heat pump at HSC, and had to do some Solidine control board changes out at heat pump 29 at the Human Services Center. I pump out the geo vaults at HSC. That's where all the valving for isolating different circuits of the geo well field. Those two vaults don't have sump pumps in them, so it's a couple of times a year we got to pump them out.
Is that something we should be looking at, putting sump pumps in?
They have. It's, they're in the middle of the parking lot, and it's just, it's kind of not really feasible.
Okay.
Type thing. So, and a couple times a year we pump them out. So, and then placed a fan motor in one of the rooftop units at the Justice Center. It's number 35. It's one of the big fresh air units that sit on the roof of that facility. The heat exchanger and compressor went out at heat pump 9, which is in Paul Fitzgerald's office itself. So. the discharge line in the geo well pit vault at the Justice Center froze this winter, so it's not very deep in the ground. We had a cold winter. It's got a sump pump in it, so we have an alarm in there that tells us if the water level gets too high. So we had to pump that one out manually with a sump pump and a generator. And then the generator project at HSC, we've got the precast wall set and the actual pad for the generator poured. So we're waiting for a little bit of nice drier weather to get the rest of the concrete.
Good. Question for Joby.
I say this is just good presentation. I'm always surprised to hear, because I've been watching this, how many calls you get to, you know, Human Services. And that clearly is the one who gets trafficked most here. So I look in the back of this room, and I say this to my fellow board members. I say it to facilities manager. You know, and Darren was very astute in pointing out, a lot of people don't know what the door in the back of the room is. And then Darren said, well, look up. And I thought, oh, that's where the exit sign is. Because I think a lot of people don't realize that, you know, as I've watched over the last several years, that people kind of go to the door not knowing, well, can I go out there? And there's no sign that says exit. They would, you know, and I just say that as an observation. Other than that, you're doing a great job. I mean, yes, you had a very busy winter, and you had issues thrown at you with those heat pumps. That you know, you didn't even try to tell the story, but we have heard it.
We've kind of, especially the heat pump 42 on the jail.
Oh, yeah. Well, and we can expect more of that, can't we? I mean,
given the facility and the type of units that are up there, it's fortunately going to be the only one that we end up talking about.
Just the first one.
And
then you're doing some work out at McFarland Park. Can you give us an update on the timeline on that work?
As far as the...
You got carpeting and you got windows, right? Those two things up there.
The windows, we're still getting some estimates on windows cost. And we at least should be able to get half of them done in FY19.
Okay.
So there's some big windows, and we ran into there. Nobody makes that particular size, so every window is a custom size. So that drives the cost as
sure
well. So, and then the carpet itself in the multipurpose room is laid. What I always refer to as the theater seating, and then the ramp on the side of it. The carpet's laid. There was a little mix-up in the color of the treads on the steps on the south side of it. There's a tread, and then we're using tile to extend to cover the whole top of it. Well, the treads come in one color, and the tile were a different color.
So
we had to order the correct color of tile. So those hopefully will be in the end of this week, first part of next week, and then that'll finish
that job. Good. Other questions for Joby?
Very straightforward. Thank you for what you're doing.
I don't have any questions. I just want to echo thanks. This has been a great transition. Thank you, Alyssa, you know, for that, and to your staff, to John, helping, you know, with the orientation to the new position. It's just been it has appeared, at least, to have been a very nice transition, and it seems like everybody is working well together, so thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome, and thank you guys for recognizing. I just like to pass along that I'm only as good as the staff I have on hand. We have a really great facilities department as a whole. So.
Yep, we do, and we have had, and you're providing good leadership, and I'll echo good job by Alyssa on this hire. Alyssa just made another hire. We'll be starting here in a couple weeks, I would think. And so Good job.
Thank you, Jody.
Thank you, Jody.
Next is emergency management. Keith Morgan.
Save the best for last, right?
Best for last. Definitely the last for last.
Best time of the day.
Looking forward to summer.
Obviously. Morning or afternoon, I should say.
Good afternoon. We'll start off by looking at responses. The four emergency management responses outlined in my report highlight the primary roles of our office: interjurisdictional and interdisciplinary coordination at multiple levels before, during, and after an incident. Elements of our I-35 closure and hazmat response plans were integrated into each of these responses. Additionally, running I-35 closure drills developed knowledge of the plan, which allowed for rapid modification of parts of it to meet the incident at hand. Our office provided assistance both in the field and at the operational level, coordinating resources both within Story County and across county lines. We provided assistance with road diversions, sheltering, hazardous materials response, weapons of mass destruction protocols, to list a few. After the events were over, we got everybody together to look at what we did right and also what we could have done better. And again, we will work on improvements across many different groups to include AIMS Multidisciplinary Safety Team, Coalition for Disaster Recovery, and individual agencies within Story County. I'm comfortable in saying the response to these events went well, in large part due to the training and professionalism of our first responders and support agencies. But this doesn't mean that we can relax. As I said before, there were areas of improvement noted in our after-action meetings that we must tackle to be ready to meet future and more difficult challenges. Does anybody have any questions on the responses?
I want to point out on the closure of I-35. So it went as well as it could go, but primarily because of the work that you guys had done leading up to it. Nobody saw this coming. The interstate was closed for how many hours?
Approximately 5 hours.
Yeah. Substantial amount of traffic. We had Super Bowl traffic coming south from the Twin Cities, and we were prepared to handle an event like that because of the planning work that you guys had put in to get ready. So thank you for that.
I appreciate that. Our plan was designed for a much more gentle shutdown of I-35 as opposed to something that quick. And in the future, we actually will be adding an additional layer to the plan to adjust for that. And one of the things that we've pointed out, we have to look at Highway 30 in the same light that we're looking at I-35. Yep. So that's some of the future stuff. We're working that through the multidisciplinary safety team. Moving along to planning, the office is balancing major planning efforts at one time. The success of these efforts depends on jurisdictions. The first planning effort is a hazard mitigation plan revision. The objective of this effort is to identify mitigation strategies to reduce the risk of natural and man-made disasters to people and structures within Story County. We can't eliminate all risk out there, but I'm asking for the Board of Supervisors to lead the effort to bring together the different agencies within county government to develop realistic strategies to balance our risk of these threats with the cost of prevention. Our second planning effort is to conduct a hazardous materials commodity flow study within Story County. We have a consultant working with the Local Emergency Planning Committee, the LAPC, to identify what hazards hazmat is transported across the county, how can it present risks to communities and critical infrastructure, and to provide first responders better understanding of the situations they may face during a transportation-related hazmat call. On top of all of these planning efforts, we have revised our emergency management level plans for public information operations, agricultural and natural resources, and hazmat. Moving along to training.
Before we go to training, very first part of that, you said you need the Board of Supervisors to help you pull everybody together. So we're going through our entire hazard mitigation plan.
Correct.
Leanne Harder, as our special projects person, is who is serving on that group and putting that together. What else do you need from the Board of Supervisors to help pull that together?
Your emphasis to the different departments and elected officials on looking over the strategies that we currently have, and also to really dive deep into what other things can we do. Oftentimes, we look at our hazard mitigation plan as a way to get grant money to build things.
We've done some great, great activities already. To mention a few is to make the storm shelter out at Hickory Grove. Great idea, and we did that even without. There are a lot of other things that we can look at. We have to look at every operation that we do. Zoning, are there ways that we can try and keep risk from bumping up against different kinds of activities? The continued work in conservation, anything that we do, we need to really look at it and select. Part of this plan is to also select and prioritize what we're going to put our efforts to. And bringing everybody together and your involvement in that process can really, really emphasize to the people that it's something that we can either spend the money now or spend a lot more money later putting things together that we could have prevented from getting broken.
So not a specific ask, but top of mind awareness is what you're asking.
Exactly.
Okay. Laura?
Well, my thought is planning presents great reports, looks at addresses, the references between the capstone to Cornerstone, addresses the zoning and other issues and stuff. So would one idea be to ask, like planning, and ask other departments, conservation, et cetera, as they're bringing projects forward or proposals forward, to reference in the reports that they bring forward a couple of lines about, when appropriate, about hazard mitigation?
Exactly. When appropriate, try and that can also be one of the strategies that you might look at is a way to integrate at the front end evaluation of these, to integrate it in the processes that are out there. They're all things, the process for hazard mitigation takes you also through looking at the threats, what are the greatest threats, and also when you develop a strategy, you look at multiple factors within that strategy to make sure that it really does meet all the requirements and it will really be able to be implemented. So we call it stapley, where you're looking at the social, political, environmental, economic, all these different factors on it, which is something that could be integrated into many different activities.
And my follow-up would be, do you see that as something that you would work with the risk manager on possibly, or would that be separate, working more with the local city volunteer fire department units, et cetera, to try and figure out what areas would have different risks, if any?
Each department within Story County could look at that and as a general guidance, say, a process to identify where this evaluation might be done is stuff. Each jurisdiction is also going to run through the same process the Story County is running through for the areas that they influence. To include, our school districts are also going to run through this process, and each of them will be responsible for identifying strategies to reduce their risk. So it is comprehensive. We do look to have two meetings to bring everybody together and to cross-pollinate good ideas and discuss what those risks are. And the key is to be realistic on what you're going to select as your strategies and follow through.
And this is our second time through this, right? We went through it 5 years ago and now going through it again.
5 years ago, what we did is we transitioned from a plan that was for all of the county except for Ames and ISU. That one, 5 years ago, we brought them all together. So this is a revision of that plan, so it should be a little bit easier this time.
I remember sitting in this room 5 years ago.
Yeah. Thanks. Did we get you off track? Back
no
to
problem.
Training.
Training, another big effort that we have taken on is a what we're calling a training, planning, and exercise workshop. Our office has got very limited resources, and what we're trying to do is to bring everybody together, gather information on what our greatest risks are, and also how we can meet capability gaps associated with those risks. So we're trying to bring together both businesses, government, volunteer organizations to really look at what we need to train on and how we can train better so we can maximize the impacts of those. We've already sent out a survey. We got back the preliminary results. Nothing really staggering from it. Severe weather is our top threat out there, and jurisdictional plans are probably our largest gap on that. So we will work on that. But what we're trying to do is to keep moving from the latest thing you see in the news to those things that we can bring everybody together and hit and get that foundation that we have within emergency management built up to a level that it is more flexible and more able to meet all of the needs across all of the county. We're going to have a meeting on March 27th up here with the agencies that are participating in that to review what was brought together and to move forward and try and set a calendar and priorities for us in the future. One of the things that you all have done that meets this is to meet those gaps is your work on the COOP-COG plan. And more importantly than putting together a COOP-COG plan will be your efforts to exercise that. That translates words and paper into real capability, and I appreciate that. Betty Bocella, our Coalition for Disaster Recovery CDR coordinator, has done an outstanding job also working to recruit and train our local volunteers in Nevada and Huxley to become parts of our RATS, the Rapid Assistance Teams for Sheltering. These teams respond to designated facilities to quickly provide initial sheltering until we can get the Red Cross in here to help us out. An I-35 crash after action item was to develop a RATS team in Ames because we've had that need twice, so that'll be one of the things that we're going to work on. Unfortunately, we'll be losing Betty as our CDR coordinator, which will be a great loss, but we're hoping to coordinate with RSVP to pick up this task force. It takes a lot of time and effort to recruit, train, and keep disaster volunteers engaged. Having motivated individuals like Betty push this issue has paid big dividends to us, and we were hoping to keep the momentum going. I'd also like to echo the words of your proclamation on volunteers. Without the work of volunteer fire, EMS, reserve law enforcement, RSVP, Star One, just to name a few, emergency management couldn't serve the needs of Story County. We as citizens and organizations need to support our volunteer organizations to keep our response capabilities at a cost-effective level. So looking forward, we're going to be busy with a commodity flow study, hazard mitigation plan revision. In addition, we're going to be ramping up for RAGBRAI as it transits across the county. A week and a day from now, we'll be participating in the statewide tornado drill, which is a perfect opportunity for Story County agencies to practice their response to severe weather. Severe weather will also become a pull on our time as we continue the TEPW process. So at this time, I'll open it up to any questions you might have.
Questions for Keith?
None.
I look forward, as Loris alluded to, what comes out of your conversations and proposing with the new risk manager as he onboards here this spring, because I think there's a lot that you have to share mutually with one another, so I look forward to that.
His success will be my success.
I suspect as much.
Just got a week at ISAC, and I'll just affirm again, we're fortunate in so many ways in Story County, but Keith Morgan's sitting here with us today, so we're so fortunate to have Keith and Melissa handling our emergency management operations. We're way ahead. Well, we are the aspirational goal of many counties right now, where we are and where Keith and Melissa have put us and have us moving. And I appreciate, Keith, that there's no time ever for you to rest on your laurels. You're always pushing us to get that next thing done. So thank you. No other reports. Public forum, two opportunities for anybody to comment on anything they want to right now. So come on up if you got anything to say. Ryan, here's your big chance. You take the microphone and say anything you want.
I'm up there now.
All right. Nobody moving to the microphone. Liaison assignments. Loris, back in the office. You get to go first today.
Okay. Well, I'm still playing catch up. As everybody kind of figured that out. All right. Did go to juvenile justice yesterday. The YSS Teen Maze that does every year for middle school students. We discussed that yesterday as part of the juvenile justice meeting. And they want to extend an invitation to both of you. Well, actually, it's all three of us, but I've actually worked juvenile justice, or worked Teen Maze as a volunteer, to come out and visit it. Marty, I guess you said you've already been out.
When as a parent, I got to vote to appropriate it through Nevada Schools by being on its board, and I also attended with my children, so
Okay.
I've already got eyes on.
Well, great. If you'd like to go, okay, then they'll give you a personal tour. One thing that did come up from that, I just want to know, because I think we might want to follow up with Jerome Rewerts when next time he comes, is apparently that in last year, according to the YSS people, there were only 10 juvenile prosecutions for alcohol-related offenses in the entire county, or in referrals over to juvenile court. Now, so we got into a discussion about that. We had two law enforcement officers from Ames PD there. And the discussion in the industry, if you will, in law enforcement is to not charge these charge. And yet that's coming up with ramifications then, and then people are not being directed toward treatment. So it's an interesting dialogue. Thursday night, I'm going, I don't know, I think Marty's going too. Nevada's having a community conversation on substance abuse. It'll be interesting to hear how it's handled in Nevada and the east part of the county if they also are not charging. In fact, they say people aren't even calling to complain about just alcohol parties anymore of underage. So it was something to be on the radar with, okay? And then I got heard of this week back in the meeting groove, and I did go to Sci-Ride last night. It's interesting, Sci-Ride's getting ready to launch a new kind of, they call it Sci-Ride 2.0 model. They are lowering their fees by 25 cents for a single ride, et cetera, and the routes will start to change over the summer. There's some great, I think, possibilities in the future to be able for her to maybe serve the eastern part of the county better and then actually come into that eastern industrial area in Ames and switch over to Sci-Ride. We may have some linkages that we wouldn't have previously. And also, getting back right away, I had a call from a Herder user in Nevada who was thrilled about the amount of service there is now in Nevada. Okay? Those are the highlights.
Pardon? You are seeing the vehicles here quite a bit.
I'm so excited.
Yeah. That's a clear win.
Yeah. Done.
Yeah. Before you're done, let's square up where we started our conversation today, because I heard you suggest that I didn't communicate appropriately or I didn't do what I said I was going to do. I supplied you with the email. Our entirety of our conversation, is it different than you thought it was?
Well, I think what we've done is I asked questions in my part of it, and when you came back and said you'll handle getting it on a future board agenda, and I then went into handle to hoping there would be information.
Right,
so
I made an assumption
about an expectation there because I'd asked the question down below.
Absolutely. So but I just want to underscore I did exactly what I said
what
I was
you said
do.
You were going to do.
Okay. Marty.
The E1911 board passed it, adopted its budget for 19 last week, which is always good. No problems there. I will be attending my first Story County Housing Trust board meeting today. Fortunately, getting out of here on time. I have an Ames Boys and Girls Club meeting today, or tomorrow. We've got a CICS regional mental health with a breakout meeting here on Thursday. Grant 5 has took a lot of time up in talking to citizens involved in it. Looking forward to that meeting tonight. I don't know what to expect, but I suspect it'll be substantial. Lastly, but not least, tomorrow at Rotary, I am taking Lisa Markley with me to, who stands out in the hall, turns around, looks, to Rotary to talk budgeting with the Nevada Rotary Club tomorrow. And as we have the good fortune to see Nevada adopted their budget last week, too, there will be a little bit of comparisons on a local basis to see where everybody stands.
Outstanding. I'm scheduled tomorrow to fly to Washington, D.C. for meetings, and, of course, it's close to blizzard in Washington, D.C., so that one will be really interesting. Last week was a good week at ISAC. As long as Wayne Clinton was on the board, I had always kind of taken a back seat into the county's involvement in ISAC because Wayne did such a wonderful job. I'll just say to the two of you, it is important for Story County to have a presence on ISAC and get down there and visit with our representatives and make sure that we're giving a larger county perspective to everything that's going on in ISAC and with state. Clearly some interesting bills and an interesting week last year at the State House. I'll keep you guys posted as we go.
I just have a question for you. What were kind of your top takeaways from the national NACO?
From NAGO?
Yeah, from NAGO a couple weeks ago.
The opioid epidemic is here to stay, that there is hope for bipartisan work, even at the national level, as much as we feel like sometimes we've lost that ability, and that us having a presence and a voice is something that's worth our time. Last year we were fortunate, we had two people out there, both Deb Shildroff and I went out, but that was my first time, and for me anyway, you never get quite as much out of your first time through. You don't quite know how things fit together. This time I was able to be much more engaged and involved in what was going on, and saw a huge benefit. But really where I'm focusing right now is with our Iowa Association of Counties and my role on the Supervisors Exec Board, and just trying to make, I'm the only supervisor from a large county on the Supervisors Exec Board. So it kind of makes it an interesting voice to have in the room. So, anything else?
No.
Okay, I take a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
And we are adjourned.